Welcome to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates. It is Thursday, February 20th. It is good to be with you today. We have a great guest lined up today and a good topic. We're continuing our conversations on the 9th and 10th commandments on coveting today. So we'll get to that topic or that conversation here in just a little bit. We're going to talk with Bob and Robin Fossum from the Northwest District of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod about parenting and children, coveting and contentment. We'll get to that here in just a little bit. I want to say thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University, Wisconsin, for supporting our program. If you'd like to find out more about Concordia University, Wisconsin, just go to our website, kfuo.org. Look for that sponsor section and the CUW logo there. Click on that. That'll take you to their page and find out all about the programs they have to offer and where they're located. Go check it out, kfuo.org and the sponsor section. If you have questions for our guest today, too, you can give us a call or an email. The phone number is 314-821-0850 or 1-800-730-2727, or you can email us, family@kfuo.org. We'd be glad to take your questions. Well, joining us by phone today, we have two family ministry professionals. Joining us by phone, we have Robin Fossum. She's Director of Early Childhood Ministry for the Northwest District of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Good morning, Robin.
Good morning, Andy.
Thanks so much for being our guest today.
It's our pleasure.
Also joining us by phone today, we have Bob Fossum, Director of Family Ministry for the Northwest District of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Good morning, Bob.
Hi, Andy. It's good to be with you.
Thanks for being our guest today.
Absolutely.
Now, you two happen to know each other, I guess, huh?
Yeah, we do. We met in the Family Ministry program back at Concordia, Nebraska. And I think we have the distinction of being the first family that had its origins in that family ministry program.
That's right.
Well, that kind of speaks volumes about the program then, I guess. Huh?
Yeah, absolutely. We believe in it so much that we decided to make it personal.
Yeah.
Well, Robin, let's start with you. Tell us a little bit about the work. Both of you are in fairly new positions at the Northwest District. Robin, tell us about the work that you'll be doing as the Director of Early Childhood Ministry there in the Northwest District.
Well, Andy, I look forward to being in a position to help empower the leaders that are out in the field in our early childhood centers. Empower them to fulfill their purpose, their passions for raising up children to know Jesus, especially being able to touch the lives of those children who are part of our community that are not part of the faith family yet, to be able to influence them with the love of Christ and build them up in that relationship with Christ as well as reaching out to their family. So my role will primarily be through leadership development, empowering the leaders in those centers to, with resources, with networking, with consultations, to do what they've been called to do.
Very good, very good. And Bob, you are the new Director of Family Ministry for the district. Tell us what will that entail?
Well, a couple things. First of all, very similar to Robin. Part of our end statement for our Educational Services Department at the Northwest District is to help develop leaders. And so my role will be more with the directors of Christian education that serve in our district and how we can mentor and encourage those folks in the ministries that they do through leadership development. But another piece that Rob and I will have a chance to do together is to develop a family ministry response within the district, which is right now just kind of a clean canvas for us. We have an opportunity to begin to gather folks around us, and we have just a list of great folks that we're looking to invite to be a part of that process and to see how we can share family ministry expressions throughout the Northwest District of Lutheran Church.
Our conversation today, we're talking about particularly the topic of coveting and the topics coveting and contentment and what that looks like from parenting. So let me review the 9th and 10th commandment before those commandments before we get too much further in our conversation, because I know both of you have with your background in family ministry and family life and other areas, you have a lot of knowledge when it comes to the topic of parenting. So I want to talk about children and coveting and contentment here in just a little bit. Let's review that 9th and 10th commandment. The 9th commandment, you shall not covet your neighbor's house. What does this mean? We should fear and love God so that we do not scheme to get our neighbor's inheritance or house or get it in a way that only appears right, but help and be of service to him in keeping it. And then the 10th commandment, you shall not covet your neighbor's wife or his manservant or maidservant, his ox or donkey or anything that belongs to your neighbor. What does this mean? We should fear and love God so that we do not entice or force away our neighbor's wife, workers, or animals, or turn them against him, but urge them to stay and do their duty. Now, when we hear these commandments, quite often, when we hear the explanations to them, we think, this is really more about adults. It's about houses and about workers and spouses, and we might not necessarily think of children coveting or being discontent with what they have been given. But are children discontent? Robin, what do you think? Can children become discontent and covet things that do not belong to them?
Oh, most certainly. I think it's part of our human nature DNA to be bent in that direction. And certainly our culture today plays on that through drawing our children's appetites toward things that the children then just want. I've got to have that. I've got to have that pair of tennis shoes, or I've got to have that toy, especially if it means raising their status among their peers or enabling them to feel like they belong. And we're all born with that core, that desire to belong. And I think our society today appeals to that need, that God-given need for belonging in unhealthy ways that feed that tendency to covet and desire and want things in ways that are not wise and are not helpful. So yes, I do. I think it's a great challenge for our children today and for our parents to mm-hmm. help guide our children away from that mindset and that attitude toward those things that honor and please God and that serve others.
Specializing in early childhood ministry, what does that look like for the young child? What does that look like for the toddler or the preschool child? What does that coveting look like?
Andy, if I can, sure. You know, I found an illustration that we've used, I think, that kind of defines, you know, what coveting is like from a kid's perspective. And it's one, I don't know, maybe you've heard this one before too, but it's just one that makes complete sense to me. So from a child's perspective, coveting probably sounds like this. If I like it, it's mine. If it's in my hand, it's mine. If I can take it from you, it's mine. If I had it a little while ago, it's mine. If it's mine, it must never appear to be yours in any way. If I'm doing or building something, all of the pieces are mine. If it looks just like mine, then it is mine. If I saw it first, then it's mine. If you're playing with something and put it down, it automatically becomes mine. But if it's broken, it's yours. But if it's broken and you're having fun playing with all those pieces, well, then it's mine again. And if there's any doubt about it at all, it's mine. I mean, I think that's just kind of the way that kids, I think, especially in a early childhood perspective, think about things. You know, they... and again, I think that they're just using, you know, the skills and tools and understanding and knowledge that they have at that point. You know, that's just the only way that they know how to deal with and work with life. And so as a result, those become opportunities when we see our children acting in those ways to teach them the difference between coveting and being content with things.
That was very good preschool logic.
Yeah, absolutely.
If it looks like mine, then it's mine.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And, you know, unfortunately, sometimes that creeps its way into our adult life, too.
Absolutely. And yeah. Well, and that's what I think, why I think our topic is so important today, is learning about contentment, learning contentment early on. Mm-hmm. Can children learn contentment? And what does that look like at various stages of development? I know from an educator's perspective that children go through various stages of development, and so how they learn and what they're learning along the way looks different at each different stage.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I think for me, you know, as I thought about that question of, you know, how do we teach our children about contentment, I think for me, and the perspective that I'll share, and then Robin will have a different perspective, but for me, how do we teach contentment is by giving our children an opportunity to serve others in a significant way, not just in kind of a token way, but in a significant way. You know, and I have a couple of examples I'll share with you. And I mean, one of the great experiences that we have developed at our home church, at Bethlehem Lutheran in Aloha, Oregon, was a family mission trip that we did to Mexico. We've gone on that trip 11 times, built 12 houses for families in a very needy area of Tijuana. And it's just been amazing because it's not uncommon for us to hear parents who went on that first trip and their kids, you know, to talk about how that was a defining moment for them, being in that third world condition and seeing what most of the world lives like, and how that trip continues to impact and define and ground them in their understanding of what contentment is, being able to see how good they've had it. And so we believe that one of the significant ways that contentment can be taught is by putting children along with their families, and not just putting children, but the whole family unit in an opportunity where they can serve in significant ways. And another thing that we've done here at Bethlehem, which has just been a really awesome thing, we have a group of folks who have sponsored a room at a new women's and children's center here in the Portland area. And so we took families over there and painted up the room and decorated it, and all while the woman and family who were going to be living there were present with us. And it was just a great opportunity, again, for our kids to be able to experience somebody who was not as fortunate as them, and to begin to understand that not everybody lives in the kind of house that they live in. That this was a person that was just looking to find a shelter for herself and for her children. And so there are a lot of opportunities that we've given, you know, from a clothing giveaway that we do at church to an event called Packed with Love, in which we provide backpacks and school supplies for students that we get our kids involved in, to understand that what they have and what they can share with others helps them understand what it means to be content with what they have for themselves.
Yeah, that has been a powerful experience for us to be a part of. And by the way, little 3- and 4-year-olds can serve their community. Bob mentioned Backpacks of Love through an organization here locally called Love, Inc., that we assemble backpacks with school supplies for those children in our schools who don't have the means to supply those for themselves, or family doesn't have the means, or for our kids in our schools who are homeless. And so literally, or in a great way, don't have access to those kinds of resources. So little children, like at our preschool, children are encouraged to bring in a supply to add to those bags, and taught that they can be a part of a solution that's going to help someone else. So little children can get involved. We just need to find ways, discover ways of making those service opportunities doable. But I think another really key way for the young child, especially, to learn about their world and about what it means to serve others and what it means to be content with what you have, certainly is through the use of story. A compelling story can engage emotions that personalize the meaning of the story. And of course, this is a very, very powerful tool with children. And in those instances of serving, for example, or teaching those same behaviors in our home, where that hands-on experience isn't available or isn't appropriate for that age, the use of story can illustrate that experience to the point where it can engage the child's heart and make that meaning real for them, so that they can experience it vicariously, you might say, in an effective way, and also prepare them for being a part of a real experience when it is appropriate then for them to be hands-on involved. And I think this is why organizations like everything from Compassion International to those who are passionate about rescuing abused animals turn to the use of story to teach compassion and to teach understanding of how to be part of the solution. Because when our heartstrings are tugged on, people then are motivated to respond, and then we can provide the doable way for them to respond.
And for children, especially for toddlers, for toddlers or preschool children, what I hear you saying by using story, you're using examples, images, concrete ways to teach them about sharing and serving.
That's correct. As you engage them in the story, storytelling is not only about telling the story, it's about engaging them in the story through maybe some play acting with the story. Talking about what the children in the story are doing and how they might be feeling. That will make that experience real for the child and become a pattern of learning for them. So yes.
And I think another way, too, that we can get kids involved in stories is as we're talking to them about their day and as they're describing maybe an incident that happened on recess or something, just ask our kids, well, how did you feel about that? How did that make you feel? How did that make others feel? Or as we're watching TV with our kids and we experience and see something on TV that maybe becomes a teachable moment, again, to engage our children in the story at that point and to begin to define, again, that difference between covetousness and contentment.
I'm just picturing asking a toddler, you know, how I could see them when asking them, how did that make you feel? I could see them giving a pretty reliable answer. When you ask them, how did that make someone else feel? How did that make, your friend feel? I'm curious what kind of answers a toddler might give in that scenario.
And if a child struggles at that point, I think a great response is, would you like to hear what I think about how that child might feel? And then it becomes an opportunity for you to become engaged in the story at that point.
Yeah, and also maybe engaging in a conversation with that other child as you ask that same question of that other child in the presence of the original child you were talking to about how they felt about that, so the child can hear how their friend feels.
What I'm hearing are, I think, examples that can be used not only at home, but also at school as well.
That
partnership between home and school, between parents and educators, teachers, I think can be really key, is what I'm hearing you say.
Absolutely. I think the one other thing that I would add to this conversation on this subject is that, of course, we know the power of modeling behaviors. Probably the strongest form of imprinting on our children is modeling the behaviors that we desire to see in them as parents or as the impact adults in their life. That means for us as adults that we must work on ourselves and learn to practice internalizing that attitude of contentment in our own lives, because it's difficult to share what we don't have. So modeling is a day in, day out. It happens at home all the time. It doesn't mean that we model perfectly, but it does mean that when we have not lived up to that image that we have of being content with what we have, for example, we admit that. We're honest about that, and we start again. And by doing so, we teach our children that a mistake in judgment or an error in attitude in this regard with respect to contentment is not equivalent to failure, but is a part of learning. And through that, we model grace and hope and vision for growing into that life that we've been called to as followers of Jesus.
Sure. It sounds like an opportunity for confession and forgiveness and to model that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Certainly. Well, let's go to the phones. We've got Cheryl in Indianapolis. Good morning, Cheryl.
Good morning. I was listening to, that was excellent, all the arguments that toddlers give for deciding what is mine. And it reminded me of, well, the argument for abortion. If it's in my body, it's mine. I can decide. But it also reminded me of Isaiah 43, verse 1, "Fear not, for I have redeemed you. I have called you by name. You are mine."
Yeah.
And we argument that something is mine, we're just so going against what God wants for us.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great point.
Great point, Cheryl. Thanks so much for pointing us back to that text, that scripture. I have called you by name and you are mine. That certainly is what God does in baptism. He calls us by name and makes us his own, and no one else can try to claim us. It's a great example, I think, for us as parents, as adults. Is that something that that you think children can grasp or begin to grasp? What do you think?
That we belong to Jesus? Is that your question?
That we are his.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think sometimes better than we as adults do. I mean, kids are so incredibly trusting, and yes, sometimes I think I become maybe a little bit envious, covetous of that childlike faith that kids possess. So, I mean, absolutely. And, I think sometimes we may have doubts about whether or not kids are getting it, but then they just respond with some incredibly profound statement of theirs, knowing that they are a child of God. I mean, it's a beautiful thing to witness.
Yeah, I completely agree with you, Bob. And I think that our relationship with our child is our powerful model of Christ's love for us and Christ's love for them. As we love them the way Jesus loves us, we teach them that that's the way Jesus loves them.
We're talking with Bob Fossum, Director of Family Ministry at the Northwest District of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, and Robin Fossum, Director of Early Childhood Ministry for the Northwest District of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. If you have questions for our guest today, you can give us a call or an email. The phone number here is 314-821-0850 or 1-800-730-2727, or you can email us family@kfuo.org. Well, we've been talking about proactive ways to prepare children, to teach them, to be proactive about teaching them contentment. And you may have more ideas on that before we get to the reactive, what to do when we see a child being coveting something else or being discontent. Other thoughts on the proactive approach to things?
One other idea that came to mind for me is the connection between learning to become a person whose attitude about life or way of living life is one of thanksgiving. I think contentment is a spinoff of understanding what it means to be thankful for all that God has given me. And that isn't always necessarily, by the way, just the things that we would label as good.
Mm-hmm.
It can even mean in the difficult times, of course, that as adults we have a hard time grasping that concept. But I think when I practice thankfulness for what I have as gifts from God given to me for his purpose, then I'm inclined to focus less on what I don't have or what others have. So I think that practicing thanksgiving has a byproduct of a greater sense of contentment.
And what would that look like on a day-to-day basis? Maybe conversations over dinner or talking about what you're thankful for that day? Or what are other ideas that you might have for a day-to-day way of practicing Thanksgiving?
Well, I guess a couple of thoughts I have on that. And then, Bob, if you want to jump in. First is the whole concept of the teachable moment.
Mm-hmm.
As you practice Thanksgiving yourself, it will enable you to see through your child's eyes opportunities that they have to be thankful for something that might otherwise just pass them by. So no matter what you're doing through the course of a day, if you're thinking Thanksgiving, it will help you to help them think Thanksgiving and pose questions to them. Questions are a powerful, powerful teaching tool. Even just saying, asking them, what could we find to thank God for in this moment, or for what you have to wear in your closet today, or for the opportunities that you have to be a friend to this child in your class. So helping them to always reframe their from routine to material blessings, to relationships, to reframe their thinking along the lines of how can we thank God for that, or what about that can we thank God for?
And I guess for me, in the most practical way, would be to use those moments to actually stop and just pray with your child and say, you know, the source of our blessings in our life are from our Heavenly Father. And so, you know, just as we thank Grandma and Grandpa for that birthday present, you know, we need to stop and thank God for this gift that He's given us in our life. And so it becomes a moment to point children to the true source of where our contentment lies, and that's in their relationship with Jesus Christ.
And when do you begin that? When do you begin those daily practices? Is there a particular age where you begin that?
Well, I think, you know, you have to be a student of your own child, and you have to kind of know, you know, what your child is able and capable of doing. But I would say that you begin that, you know, as soon as they begin asking questions, as soon as they begin to notice things. And, I mean, even, you know, certainly, you know, how you pray with a 3-year-old is much different than how you would pray with your 13-year-old. But the point would be that you pray with your 3-year-old because you begin to model at that point, you know, again, what contentment is and where that source of contentment comes from.
Well, we're talking with Bob Fossum, Director of Family Ministry, Northwest District, Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod, and Robin Fossum, Director of Early Childhood Ministry for the Northwest District, Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod. We need to take a break. When we come back from that break, we'll continue the conversation about parenting and children, coveting and contentment. So stick around for more Faith and Family right here on Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.
Concordia University, Mequon, Wisconsin, overlooks the beautiful shoreline of Lake Michigan. This serene main campus of CUW is just 15 miles north of Milwaukee, with all its vibrant cultural attractions. At Concordia University, Wisconsin, students living by the motto of Inspiration in Action can choose from 69 undergraduate majors, 14 master degree programs, and doctorates in pharmacy, physical therapy, and nursing practice. For more information or to take a virtual tour, visit cuw.edu.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
We have very good news from our neighbors up in Canada. A justice of the Supreme Court of British Columbia ruled that withdrawing food and water from a patient would be the cause of her death and therefore illegal. In question was the life of Margaret Bentley, an Alzheimer patient. Her family wanted spoon-fed food and water taken away so she would die sooner. Maplewood Care, the facility where Margaret was living, objected. It's estimated as many as 20% of nursing home patients require some sort of assistance in eating. Margaret was very fortunate that her facility fought for her life. Many, such as the one where Terry Schiavo was staying, were accomplices in killing the patient. You must be vigilant if you have a family member receiving assisted care.
For more information, visit our website at lifeissues.org and stay informed, more informed than you've ever been.
Winter in cold climates can feel long and dark. Hope, music, and light all help. A radio program can't do much about the light, except spiritual light, but you will find plenty of music and hope on the next Sing for Joy.
Sundays at noon on KFUO, the messenger of good news.
Welcome to today's lottery drawing. And today's winning numbers are not yours, not yours, and another number that's not yours. And the final number is not yours.
When it comes to having money, don't rely on luck. Brew your own coffee at home instead of buying that latte. Brown bag it to work instead of ordering it. Go to feedthepig.org for more free ideas on how to save.
Feedthepig.org.
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
Have you ever missed a live broadcast of one of your favorite KFUO programs? Well, let me propose a convenient solution for you. Visit the KFUO website, kfuo.org, and download your favorite program by way of podcast to your iPhone or other smart device. It's easy, it's simple, it's convenient, and you'll never miss another program. KFUO, the official voice of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, is the messenger of good news by way of radio, web, and podcast.
The wife of an Australian missionary who carried Christian pamphlets into North Korea says he's been arrested there. John Short, who's 75, has lived in Hong Kong for 50 years and has been arrested multiple times in China for evangelizing. His wife, Karen Short, says he knew doing so in North Korea was even more dangerous.
It's not an open country and it doesn't welcome Christians. Yes, we realize that. But that doesn't mean we stand by and don't do anything, because we care for the situation and we pray about it, but sometimes you have to do more than talk.
John Short's Chinese traveling companion in North Korea told Australian Broadcasting Corporation in Beijing that Short was reported to authorities in Pyongyang after leaving a Christian pamphlet in a Buddhist temple. Karen Short says she believes her husband will be freed in God's time.
That's my assurance, and I know he's courageous and he's in God's hands.
I'm Steve Coleman.
Welcome back to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates. It is Thursday, February 20th, and we are talking about parenting, children, coveting, and contentment. Yes, you can be jealous. No, wait, don't be jealous. We are talking with our friends Bob Fossum, Director of Family Ministry for the Northwest District of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, and Robin Fossum, Director of Early Childhood Ministry, the Northwest District Lutheran Church Missouri Synod as well. And before we went to the break, during the first half, we covered various ways to be proactive about teaching your children contentment, being thankful for what they are given, to help really try to steer clear of lots of situations of coveting. I know that every child, every human being carries around in them the old Adam, and so we're never going to be able to keep the law perfectly. But what about those moments when it is happening? We talked earlier about using those as teachable moments, and I know that both you, Bob, and Robin have gone through training and now teach an approach called Parenting the Love and Logic Way. Tell us a little bit about love and logic and the philosophy, that approach that you use, and how it might be applicable to the situation of, I want that, it's mine.
Yeah, I would love to. I first became acquainted with the Parenting with Love and Logic approach back when I was in the family ministry program at Concordia, Nebraska, was taking a parenting class, and we had to review a number of parenting curriculums. And frankly, I was at a point in my studies where I just didn't have a lot of time to review a lot of bad parenting curriculums. So I began to call some of my DCE friends around the country and ask them what they were using and what was helpful. And most consistently, what people were saying was that they were just finding great results with the Parenting with Love and Logic approach. And so Parenting with Love and Logic is a parenting program developed by Jim Fay, Foster Klein, and it's an approach to parenting that uses natural and logical consequences to do the teaching. And Andy, if you don't mind, Robin and I would like to just kind of share what's called the cool formula that becomes kind of the backbone of how to use and implement the parenting with love and logic way.
Sounds
and
great.
So this cool formula that they teach is an acronym, and the C in the cool formula stands for control. It's a very interesting principle that they teach. They say that parents gain control by giving it away, and you give away that control through the choices that you offer your children. But again, you only give choices to your children that are choices that you would be willing to live with. And so, you know, for example, this begins, as we teach this class, this begins by encouraging parents to begin to make a lot of deposits into their relational account with their kids by making a lot of just really easy and fun choices into their relationship with their kids. For example, at bedtime, do you want to brush your teeth before I read a story or after I read a story? Sounds like a simple thing, but again, it's a way for the child to have some control in their life and to be able to express that. Or, you know, would you like to wear your long pajamas to bed or your short pajamas to bed tonight? Or would you like, you know, read you a story from this book or from that book? Or do you want to drink water from the kitchen faucet or from the bathroom faucet? You know, and again, these may sound like trivial things, but, you know, over the course of the day, as you begin to continue to make these deposits, kids begin to understand that they have had a part in the process of choosing and controlling their decisions in their life. And then when they're coming to a point where perhaps it's a moment of conflict or something where you want to teach a lesson, then you can offer them some choices that have a little bit more meat to them. And they have already practiced how to make good choices. And so, but again, when you're offering those choices, when you're about to teach that lesson, you only offer two choices, both of which, as parenting with love and logic would say, choices that would make you deliriously happy no matter which one that the child chose. So in other words, would you like to pick up your toys before dinner, or would you like to pick up your toys as soon as dinner is done? Something like that.
So
yeah, and I think the only other thing I'd add to that, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
If your child chooses not to choose one of your choices, you need to be prepared to step in and make the choice for them in that instance and say, well, we'll give you an opportunity to choose next time. So that's the only thing that I'd add to that. So the next letter in the cool formula, O, the first O, stands for ownership. And what this relates to is ownership of the problem. So parents must first establish who owns the problem in the situation, because love and logic teaches that the best person to solve the problem is the person who owns the problem. And when parents take ownership of a problem that really belongs to their child, they essentially end up robbing that child of an opportunity to learn responsibility. So answering the question, who owns the problem, if the situation becomes that turning point to knowing when to guide your child to learn how to manage the problem situation themselves, which will be most of the time. And when you, as a parent or that impact adult, the teacher, whoever that adult is at the time, when you need to take direct action, for example, certainly when danger is present, when the child is in the potential of harm, you always step in. But also in those cases where the child creates a problem for you, for example, your child's choices in the morning as they are getting ready for their day and about how long that they're going to take getting ready for their day, when their slowness of that process put you in a position of being late to perhaps get to where you need to be, your job or some other place. So in summary, when the child owns the problem, your role as a parent is to guide them in thinking through how they can best solve that. This teaches them a skill that Bob is going to talk with us about in terms of problem solving.
So the next O in the COOL formula is an opportunity for thinking. Opportunity for thinking. And for me, this is always one of the funnest classes for me to teach in the Parenting with Love and Logic sessions, because there's this great guide to problem solving that they introduce. And this guide has five steps in there. It was just amazing to hear parents as they would implement this and come back and share their stories about how this problem solving process and teaching this to their kids was just such a powerful experience. And so I'll share real quickly these five steps. The first one, and this is the key to love and logic, is the first step is to show empathy. You know, when we see our kids make a bad decision, make a bad choice, you know, to respond in empathy to them. You know, how sad that you have chosen to do that. I bet that really hurts. And the key and the reason for this step is to let the child know that we as parents, that we as impact adults, are not the bad guy in this situation. They're decisions that are driven by their sinfulness, by their covetousness, by whatever it is, but their decisions are the problem that we want them to focus on. And so by sharing empathy, we can keep the child's focus on their decisions and not their anger on us for not empathizing with them. And then the second step in this guide to problem solving, which I think is just a great statement, is to send what they call the power message. And again, think about this in that teachable moment, and I think that this is applicable, again, for kids of all age. But, you know, what do you think you're going to do? Ask your child, so here's the issue that you're facing. Here's the problem that you're facing. What do you think you're going to do? And, you know, I guess the first question would be, well, what, you know, what if the child would say, well, I don't know. Is that an okay response? Well, absolutely, because they are starting to think about it, okay? And then if there are, you know, after they have shared some of their ideas, the third step in this love and logic approach would be to offer them some choices, maybe to make a statement like, would you like to hear what other kids have tried? Or would you like to hear what I tried when I was in a similar situation? And sometimes in this step, it's okay to offer like really bad suggestions, because as we help our kids understand, again, that gift of discernment, for them to say, no, that's really a bad decision. I don't like that one. That's an okay for them to understand that not all ideas are good ideas, and they need to be able to filter some of those ideas out. And then the fourth step, which is, again, this one kind of helps them, again, with that gift of discernment, is to ask the child to state the consequences. You know, how do you think that's going to work if you do that? What's going to happen? And just kind of help lead them through that process of, you know, what's going to happen if you respond in this way, if you say this back to that person, and just kind of help them understand what the consequences are. And then the last step in this guide to solving problems is to give the child permission to either solve the problem or not to solve the problem. And to simply say something like, you know, sounds like you got a plan. I hope that works out for you. Let me know. Let me know how that goes for you. I'd be happy to talk with you about that after you've had a chance to do that. So that's this guide to problem solving, which, again, we found to be just a goldmine for parents to be able to implement that process with their children.
Yeah, and I think, again, that teaches a lifelong skill of teaching them how to engage their thinking. And learn how to use that to make good choices. That will serve them well all their lives. The final part of the COOL formula, the L, stands for letting empathy and consequences do the teaching. Now, this can be a hard thing for parents to do, to step back and allow our child to experience the consequences of making a poor decision or not making a decision, because we don't want our kids to hurt. We don't want to see them go through that experience. That's just natural. We want to protect them, and sometimes we believe that the most loving thing to do is to step in and protect them from that pain, mm-hmm. when just the opposite may be true, because wise parents know that short-term discomfort is a whole lot better than long-term pain. And that the cost of poor choices only gets up the older that we get. Experiencing consequences of poor choices is the best way for our children to learn responsibility. One of the teachers, Jim Fay, in the video component of this Love and Logic program, gives an illustration of an evening where a friend is over visiting, and it's getting close to bedtime. And his children are, this is when Jim's children were younger, his children are responding in their typical way of wanting this and that at the last minute and coming in and out of their bedroom and interrupting that time with the guest. And Jim's response typically would have been one of great anger, and telling them, get into that room, get into bed, be quiet, and go to sleep, you know, as if you can command somebody to go to sleep. Jim flips that around and talks about that in Love and Logic. A Love and Logic response to that would be to begin with, as Bob illustrated earlier, giving the kids choices about what they might do prior to their being in bed, getting their drink, what they read, and so forth. And also, his message to his children was in that instance, look, our agreement is that you need to remain in your room. You can go to sleep when you want to go to sleep. But as long as you stay in your room, I'm okay with that.
That we wake up tomorrow at 6 o'clock.
Exactly. Knowing that tomorrow the alarm goes off at the same time and we'll be coming in to cheerfully get you up for school or whatever that might be. And of course, as he's listening to his kids in the room and they're playing a radio or they are playing with games or so forth, they don't seem to be getting it. And they don't. But the point is the next day they get it, because then it's time to get up and it's time to get off to school. And, a child might say, oh, I don't feel good. I want to stay home today. And Jim's response was, how sad. I know when I don't sleep very much, it's hard for me to get going with my day too. But don't worry. You can get a good night's sleep tonight. You know, here we go. Here we go with our day. And probably the kicker is when the kids get home from school, one of them is falling asleep at the dinner table. Another one, instead of playing, has fallen asleep on the floor next to his toys. And then finally, the wise child says, I am going to bed early tonight. And it only took once for them to learn that in order to function well as they're expected the next day, they need to create their own opportune time for getting the sleep that the night before.
But ultimately, the consequences did the teaching there. I mean, the kids just realized that, you know, they were grumpy at school. They didn't enjoy recess as much, time with their friends because they were so tired. And so the consequences were able to do the teaching. And the challenge for parents at that point is to refrain and to keep ourselves from saying words that will kill this part of the parenting with love and logic approach, and is to say those words, well, I told you so. Because then all of a sudden the consequences get thrown out the window, and the child then redirects their anger, their whatever their feelings towards their parents, because those are fighting words rather than thinking words.
Right.
And so, let the consequences do the teaching.
And you notice that in this step, it pairs empathy with consequences, and that empathy always precedes consequences because, as Bob mentioned earlier, when we express empathy to our child for the situation that they have created for themselves by their poor choice, the child learns that we're on their side, that we're alongside them, that we're partners in this, that we're not adversaries in this. And then that opens them to focus more on what they chose to do to put them in this situation than on an authority imposing now what consequences might occur.
So what I've heard through the whole process, the COOL, choices, ownership, opportunities for thinking, and letting empathy, empathy and consequences do the teaching. Through that, I think what I'm taking away is you start with helping children make small decisions, small choices.
Absolutely.
Give them opportunities to make small choices so that they learn how to make choices. Don't make them complex choices that you start with. Make them very simple choices, like you said, with just two options. And they're both options that you would just be delighted that if they choose either one. And start with the simple things so that they learn the skill of decision making and learn about consequences. And they learn about empathy. They see and hear and feel your empathy so that when it comes time to make more complex decisions, they've got that foundation. They've already got a foundation for good choices.
Absolutely, and that's where that guide to problem solving is just such an amazingly powerful tool to share with parents, who then can share that with their kids, so that they can have those tools and skills right at their fingertips to use when their parents aren't around.
I want to go back to something you said on the last one, letting empathy and consequences do the teaching. You said there's some key words that we must avoid. If we don't, or if we use those words, if we use those terms, then it basically throws the empathy and the natural consequences out the window.
And that would be, I mean, the phrase that I think that we revert to the most is that statement, you know, I told you so. I mean, think of that example that Robin gave of the bedtime story with Jim and with his kids. When he tells that story, he comes back and says, you know, how close he was to saying, I told you so, because that is our tendency to do that. But we need to understand that it is the power of the consequences that will teach the most lasting message to the kids. You know, the old Charlie Brown specials that were on TV years ago, you know, when And you know, the voices of the parents always came across as, you know, wah, 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 wah. And I think at times like that, that's kind of how our kids hear us. But consequences will never come across that way, because those are very real, those are very present, and kids understand that if I do this, if I treat my friends this way, if I talk to my friends this way, this is how they will respond to me. That's just the natural consequence of how God has wired us relationally. And so those consequences will have a much more, much higher teaching impact than our words will.
Yeah, I think that phrase, "I told you so," really short circuits the impact of the decision, the poor decision that was made. Putting ourselves in that position, we've done, as an adult, to having done something that we know, we just know was not helpful, was not a good decision, and then have to have someone tell us, "Gee, I told you so. Gee, haven't we talked about this before?" It comes across as a bit condescending, and it really robs our learning from that situation, because now we're just focused on being angry that they threw it into our face.
As much as I would want to say "I told you so" as a parent, it sounds like it really turns it into a power struggle then.
Absolutely. That's well put. Yep.
And power struggles never end well between parents and children.
Well, and power struggles never end well in our relationship with our spouses. Power struggles never end well with our coworkers at work. I mean, these are, you know, that guide to problem solving is not just a great tool to use with our children. It's a great tool for us to use at work with our relationship with our spouses also.
And so it really is a approach to empathy and communication and decision making.
Absolutely.
And I think it's quite biblical. When you look at the title of the program, Love and Logic, this rests on the premise that our love for our children is absolutely unconditional. Like the love that God has for us and for them, everything that we do in response to the choices that they've made is couched in unconditional love. So it's never about retribution. It's really never about punishment. It's about learning from our mistakes and going forward in grace. And that learning from our mistakes becomes a logical piece that fits the way that God has made us as learning and growing and developing beings.
Even law and gospel is kind of what I'm hearing too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you bet.
There's the effects of the natural law, but then the unconditional love and forgiveness, certainly.
That's correct.
Well, I think you've helped me. I have a 5-month-old, so I'm going to go try this on him tonight. So see if I can try to tell him when to go to bed. Oh no, wait!
I think he's still in control of that.
we've had children in love and logic classes that are, you know, between 2 and 3 years old, and when they'll come back over the course of the 6 weeks that we teach this, they'll come back with examples of, "I don't believe it. My 2.5-year-old guessed this at their level."
And that makes sense. You start simple with those really simple choices. Do you want to brush your teeth first or put on your pajamas first?
Absolutely.
and those natural consequences. I think that one would take some time and some practice to learn, you know, how to let those natural consequences go.
And not only the natural, but also the logical ones. You know, there's a part of the exercise that we teach is, you know, for parents to write and develop logical consequences. And that's one that they've struggled with. But one that we, part of the skill that we teach is to delay the consequence. That, you know, you don't need to come up with a consequence right away, but you can delay the consequence a little bit. And what that does is it gives that child a little bit more opportunity to think about the decisions that they've made and maybe what the consequence is going to be.
Well, our time is winding down, and I feel like I've learned a lot, and I'm sure our listeners have as well. So I want to say thanks for being my guest today and for enlightening us on how we can strengthen parents in their role as parents and to help them really live out their vocations as parents and to avoid those horrible whiny situations.
Thank you, Andy, for this opportunity. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, we love talking about this, and we love to be able to do this in a in an arena that can help people who are part of our church. So thank you for this opportunity.
Thanks so much. Our guests today have been Bob and Robin Fossum. They're Director of Family Ministry in the Northwest District and Director of Early Child Ministry in the Northwest District. Thanks for being our guests. God's blessings to you. And the program will be archived on our website as well. So if you want to go back and listen to what we talked about today, you can do that. Coming up tomorrow, we'll continue our Faith and Family conversations.
Faith and Family Monday through Friday at this time. Faith and Family is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for Faith and Family to continue. Our address is 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. You can contact us on the web and download Faith and Family at KFUO.org. Worldwide KFUO, on the air, online, and on demand.